This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
Welcome to the current state of WWE. It is Monday, April 22nd, and before Monday Night Raw, we are recording live here as we are going to talk about a couple of topics this evening, as it's going to be about Roman Reigns, and then it's going to be about our tag team division and some things in between. But obviously we took a week off with last week, as Anthony was in person at Monday Night Raw in the Bell Center in Montreal. Really fun arena. I've been there once, and it's a lot of fun to be there, and still regret not being there for the return of Austin in 2003 at No Way Out. Very angry about that. But we had a week off, and now we're back. And Anthony, how's everything going post-WrestleMania, and how was Raw?
Going well. I mean, Monday Night Raw was good. It did lack a lot in the way of star power. Like, for a very, very, very casual fan, like my girlfriend who came with me, which is always so sweet of her, she found that it lacked star power. You know, no Seth Rollins, no Becky Lynch, Rhea Ripley opened the show, but obviously in a non-wrestling capacity. And then a lot of, you know, SmackDown stars live on SmackDown, you know, that goes without saying, but like, I found the SmackDown roster has more star power right now. And this is probably why they're making Cody Rhodes travel with the Raw group until the draft, to just try and bridge that gap until they can kind of reshuffle things. But I mean, you got to see Triple H, which was awesome. I hadn't seen Triple H live in person for probably about 19, 18 years or so, maybe even 20, to be honest with you. That was cool to see. The wrestling was really, really good. And, you know, Cody Rhodes comes out. Everyone knows how I feel about Cody Rhodes. But I said this on After Dark, but I have to say, the guy is so bleeping over that once you experience his entrance in person and you experience the reaction in person, it not makes you like the character more, but it makes you more accepting of it, because you really realize how little of a minority you are in. And that even though he's not my cup of tea, the fans go absolutely ape you-know-what for this guy. And the entrance is very captivating. You find yourself like almost joining in. I actually tried to boo, and then quickly my girlfriend was just like, stop making an ass of yourself. But no, honestly, like, I don't like the character anymore. I still feel the same way, but I have more of an acceptance and respect for him, just because he has gotten over more so in a way than, I don't even remember the last time I've seen a babyface get this over. I guess probably since Daniel Bryan.
Well, I think that's part of what, you know, not to turn this into a Cody conversation as we tend to do every week, but I think that part of it is that he has come across to those that support him as the common man. He's come across as this guy that he does things that a lot of other champions and stars don't, and he seems very humble and that kind of thing. And again, you and I, not a fan of his character, but he is and does have a very captivating entrance. And I do wonder if he would be as over as he is had the entrance kind of been a little bit less exciting. His entrance is very sing-along. It's very produced. It's got fireworks. The song is catchy. It's got all the ingredients. He's got the perfect professional wrestler's entrance. And I think that has helped him out a great deal, on top of the fact that he is a returning star, and he does have the family history, as we've known for 2 years now and heard nonstop every week. So I get it. You get it. We get it. But doesn't mean we have to like him. And I was listening. I was very intently listening for that one faint boo, and I couldn't hear it. I was listening for something, anything, and it was, if there were any, like yourself, it was drowned out completely by everyone else screaming for him. And he's over. I mean, you and I aren't going to pretend that he's not. He's over, mega over, and good for him. But we're here to talk about the Roman Reigns scenario that had, you know, after he lost at WrestleMania, we kind of knew that they were going to go in a different direction. The writing was on the wall. They can't continue with this formula in the bloodline. And boy, have they changed things up in a big way with Solo Sikoa taking the reins, so to speak, of the bloodline, assuming the position of the leadership, with Paul Heyman being very reluctant, yet going along with it, feeling very torn. Tama Tonga comes in and I think has made a really good impact over the last couple of weeks and has fit right in, immediately fit right in. And I've enjoyed, while he hasn't said anything, I've enjoyed his presence. He feels like he belongs. We know we're in a new chapter. And I laid out last night how I think things are going to go as we move forward. But specifically, as we look at Roman Reigns, you heard the Roman chants on SmackDown just 2 weeks after he was the biggest heel in the company and the fans wanted nothing to do with him as champion. Just 2 weeks of him not even saying a word, not even being there. The We Want Roman chants have already started. Your thoughts?
Well, it is a classic thing of not knowing what you have until it's gone. And I'm not going to play Monday Morning Quarterback and walk back everything I said, because I still feel that if he was going to be a part-time champion, like he had been predominantly for the last 24 months, you could not keep the belt on Roman Reigns because of all the damage it did in terms of maybe not like sabotaging the credibility of it, of his run, but just not having your main championship on television every week or bi-weekly or sometimes monthly. But it doesn't change the fact that when Roman Reigns was there, he was arguably, and according to some, indisputably the biggest draw that they have. When Roman Reigns showed up, it was must-see TV. And I think that if he was even semi-full-time, like he showed up bi-weekly and fought at every pay-per-view, let's say, but didn't fight on free TV, I think a lot of people, myself included, would have been okay with him continuing on as champion. That being said, when they spoke about being at the bottom of the third of the Bloodline story after WrestleMania 39, I don't think that necessarily meant with Roman as champion. And you and I have had spoken about that the Bloodline story had run stale with the same old formulaic retaining matches of Roman with the solo gang involved and Jimmy and a bunch of interference and finally him winning. But once he lost the title and presumably turned to a babyface somewhere down the road, you would have almost just as much of a runway of 3.5 years as you did with him as a heel in the early going. And I think that right now, like you said, without even doing anything, saying anything, aside from his, 10-second clip he put on social media the Tuesday after WrestleMania, yesterday I mourned, today is day one, something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, they have turned him into what I believe will be the most mega babyface that will blow Cody Rhodes out of the water. Like, when his music hits the next time, people are going to go absolutely ballistic, and they haven't had to do a single thing. The last image we have of Roman Reigns, aside from the fan footage of him hugging Paul Heyman at the top of the stage, was him being pinned by Cody Rhodes. That's the last image we have of Roman Reigns over 2 weeks ago now. And all of a sudden, we've gone from, you know, what was it, 7 years ago of hearing F you, Roman, to now thank you, Roman, and we want Roman. And it just goes to show that there was always a path to getting Roman Reigns over as a babyface. And Triple H has shown that. And it just goes to show how much wasted time that we had in the 2010s from, let's say, 14 all the way to 2020 of the force feed approach we were forced to indulge from Vince McMahon.
That this character that's about to come up, the one that eventually will return, is the one that Vince McMahon initially wanted. This is the reaction he dreamed about. This was his wet dream, really.
Yeah,
was this reaction for Roman Reigns that we are finally getting. And I agree with 100%. I would probably, I might even chant We Want Roman if I was there, because it feels like he's now run its course. The one thing that the fans were annoyed about, and you and I as well, was just the fact that every time you saw him, it didn't become special anymore. It was just a reminder that he's not there even when he was there, and that he was holding the title hostage. That is what we got annoyed about. Now you take the part that the fans got annoyed about out of the picture. You give fans time to mourn his loss, remember or think about what they have just gone through, that they'll likely in our lifetimes never go through a title run that long again, ever. Like, we will probably die never having a title reign this long. ever again. We realized the significance of it. We were there for a moment, and bam, you have the biggest babyface in the company who's just sitting on the sidelines and hasn't said peep about anything. So this is going to be a fun build to a Roman's return, and I don't think it's going to happen immediately. And I wouldn't, you know, we're used to Roman Reigns not being here. It's just par for the course. So this time it feels different, though. His absence doesn't feel like it's not like you're looking at this going, yeah, I know, it's just kind of the usual Roman Reigns. It is. But at this point, we're like, now we want to see what happens when he comes back, because Solo has taken the reins. We've got Tama Tonga there. You know, apparently, according to Paul Heyman, Tama Tonga and Solo Sikoa shouldn't be doing what they're doing. They don't have the authority to do what they do. So, I mean, I have my whole quick story laid out of, I think it's The Rock who's calling the shots with Tama Tonga and Solo. And Roman's going to come back, probably with Jimmy in tow. And you're going to have a Roman Reigns and Jimmy, versus Solo and Tama Tonga. Eventually, Roman's going to face The Rock at some point down the line. But this could be all the way to the top. I think a Roman versus Rock setup.
Yeah, well, I'm right with you. Like, you took the words right out of my mouth. I didn't get a chance to listen to your weekend review yet, but it seems like a layup. But like, just because it's maybe predictable, it doesn't mean that it's wrong. And I think that now we're seeing the setup for a babyface Roman versus a heel Rock. And I know that you were kind of opposed to that in the early going, and as was I, but like, given the way things have played out and the crowd reaction since WrestleMania for Roman and how good the final boss character has really evolved with The Rock since, you know, February, are you more open to the idea of a heel Rock versus a babyface Roman somewhere down the line?
Everything in me is still wanting, like, my brain is telling me, no, like, we got to get the traditional match that we all wanted for 8 years. And part of me still wants that. But at the same time, now we're living through a point where the heel Rock is even better than anyone could have imagined. It may arguably be his best character he's ever produced in 20 years of his career or more. And then you have Roman Reigns, who has been a heel for the last 4 years, since SummerSlam of 2020, almost 4 years he's been a heel. The fans have got a chance to hate him, go through the longest title run of most of our lifetimes, see every single match he's done and realize he's getting better each time. And then you have the formula for a heel Rock, babyface Roman successful match that you could put off at SummerSlam or more likely at WrestleMania. And I think I'm not opposed to it. I would absolutely be interested in it because here's the thing. I don't want The Rock to change. I don't want him suddenly coming back and being, you know, a traditional Dwayne Johnson playing the babyface Rock that we've seen over the years since he really left in 2004. I don't want that. I want The Rock, who is the final boss. This character is excellent. So you almost, if you're going to pull the trigger this year, you almost have to go with babyface Roman and heel Rock, even though we wanted the complete opposite. At the end of the day, as long as we get the match one-on-one, I think that's really what the fans are after, is just the one-on-one. And I think all the fans that hated this match because it's Cody Rhodes was being pushed aside, every one of those fans will come back for this match because no more titles on the line. It's about pride. It's about bloodline. And if they tell the story right up until this year's WrestleMania, I hope it's Rock Roman and not Cody Rock. I know everyone seems to like want Cody Rock. I'm not that interested in Cody Rock. I'd watch it. But for me, this is still about Roman and The Rock. And I think that's what they're building towards here.
Well, you could do Rock and Cody at SummerSlam, right? And I think that would be a good platform for it, because I feel personally that SummerSlam over the last decade or so has really lost like the wind out of its sails. Like, more times than not, I feel like I come away from SummerSlam feeling disappointed. That's just the way it is recently. I think last year was arguably the worst pay-per-view in the Triple H era, I would say. But then again, Vince was still around, you know, muddying the waters behind the scenes for sure. But no, I'm with you. It has to be Rock versus Roman here. And, you know, in terms of The Rock being a babyface, I felt that like since like when he came back in 2011, he kept the integrity of the classic babyface Rock character. But as soon as he kind of got involved in that program with CM Punk in 2012 and early 2013, And then he obviously has the match with Cena and every subsequent appearance after that. I felt like he was never The Rock again. It was just this goofy spin-off of The Rock that was mainly Dwayne Johnson, promoting his movies, promoting his Under Armour brand or what have you. And that is why I always thought that, like, man, if he is ever going to be The Rock again, it's going to have to be a heel version. And the final boss version of The Rock was not only heel, but it felt like The Rock, like with so many new layers and, you know, a narcissistic complex and what have you. And now you have Roman, who just organically has become the biggest babyface, I would say. Like, when he comes back, I think he will supersede Cody, which is saying a lot. And you can't just go against the fans because of what you think is right. And that's where the whole Vince McMahon angle comes into all of this, where ever since the breakup of the Shield in, what was it, May of 2014, Vince McMahon was trying to shove a babyface version of Roman Reigns down our throat. The babyface version of Roman Reigns that kept the Shield song and the Shield entrance and the Shield gear and even his mannerisms, like nothing really evolved. And it went on for what, just about 6 years up until the pandemic, where you just shoved that version of Roman Reigns down our throats and it never really worked. I feel like there were brief moments where the fans were okay with him. When he came back from leukemia, obviously I felt the boos kind of went away, but he wasn't getting the cheers. Certainly not like he is now, not even being there. But it makes you wonder, like, how much of good content did we lose out with Vince McMahon in, like, those final 5-6 years with him at the helm, specifically with Roman Reigns?
There's things, I mean, we'll never know. However, the spinoff to that would be, well, look where he is now. If Vince didn't do all of that awfulness of shoving it down our throat and having a war of attrition with the fans ultimately won, I think that maybe with the butterfly effect, we don't have this. Maybe the tribal chief never happens. Maybe this version of Roman never happens. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, everything seemed to, as terrible as it was for that time, and you and I hated it, and a lot of other fans did too. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't the Cody Rhodes effect. Like, there was a significant portion of the audience that hated that Roman Reigns character, and it was mainly women and children that seemed to gravitate to him. It was a John Cena effect. So fans were very split, unlike Cody Rhodes. So now, if you didn't have that happen with Vince, which was terrible, and it didn't work for so long, he would maybe take credit for the fact, well, look where he is now, damn it. I mean, it's like, but yeah, you stumbled into that, right? Like, so it wasn't that this was a vision for you that he would be the tribal chief. It's something that happened during the pandemic. And actually, the pandemic may have been also contributed to this tribal chief character, because he wouldn't have taken that time off. And maybe he wouldn't have thought, hey, it's a good idea to go heel now. It's a good idea to, for the first time ever, turn heel, join Paul Heyman. When there's no audience in attendance, you have less stress on you. He's able to kind of spread his wings and not be where he was. I mean, we all saw how awful he was on promos beforehand. He had the freedom to just kind of take a breath and realize there's no fans in attendance, figure himself out. It was kind of a perfect storm, so to speak, where Vince shoved him down our throats for 5 years. But it wasn't for this purpose. But then the pandemic happens, which allowed him time off. And everything seemed to kind of work out. So sure, it was terrible, but had that not happened, I don't know if we would have this version of Roman Reigns. It's all, unless somebody has a time machine, we just don't know.
Yeah, that's a very good point. For me, it was more just how long it went on for, because it started in late 2014, the major push of Roman Reigns. And he went on to main event WrestleMania 31, 32, 33, 34, and then 35, I believe the only reason he didn't main event it was because he was out with leukemia up until, I believe it was February of that year, and he ended up just having a one-on-one match versus Drew McIntyre. But he main evented 4 straight WrestleManias in the same character, doing the same thing, getting booed, being rejected, all this stuff. And you would have thought that after, like, for me, I thought, like, what do you think was the worst main event? 32 versus Triple H?
32.
And for what reason?
By far. Well, first of all, everyone knew what Triple H was there to do. I mean, like, it was so obvious. You're not going to have Triple H there to beat Roman Reigns, the guy that you're trying to build. The buildup was not that great. The fans were behind Triple H because he's a legacy star. Everything was flipped. It was way too long of a match. I mean, that match went on way too long on top of it. And it was just terrible. Everyone knew what it was about. And you have a WrestleMania crowd that is usually kind of pro heel and very tough on the baby faces. It was just a bad ending. And I remember it ended the show and I was just, it was awful. So I think 32 was probably the worst.
And you go into that WrestleMania and then you come back with Roman versus The Undertaker, which you were in attendance for in a non-title match to close the show. Like, how does that match compare to the year before?
Well, I don't think that one's on Roman. Even The Undertaker has said that one's on him. It was sloppy. It wasn't the worst match, but for an Undertaker match to have that many botches, he was out of shape. He didn't, you know, he was aging. That was the first time we really saw a match with Taker that you go, oh boy. And it was not good from just the fact that not the build wasn't bad. It was okay. And it was a dream match for a lot of people. And Taker was there to anoint Roman Reigns again. How many torches did Roman? I mean, seriously, how many torches did Roman get passed at WrestleMania? A lot. But this was another one of those. And it was really on The Undertaker at this one. I hate to slam the dead man. I know you don't care, but it really was on him. I mean, yeah, but even The Undertaker has said in his own many documentaries that, hey, that one was on me. So it was really Taker's fault for that one.
And then you go to WrestleMania 34, and I don't want to like do like a year-by-year tracking of Roman Reigns, but then he main events WrestleMania for a second time against Brock Lesnar, and it sounds like at the 1 yard line, they call an audible and they come away with Brock winning, which leads to that infamous clip of Brock chucking the Universal title at Roman Reigns at Vince McMahon as he comes to Gorilla, and Roman Reigns gets bloodied and all this stuff. And it's like three consecutive, because the first year I actually agreed with that main event and the way that it ended was brilliant with the Heist of the Century. But 32, 33, 34, you have three lackluster WrestleManias. Like, to be honest, like if you go back over the last decade, those are arguably the three worst. And in consecutive fashion, trying to anoint Roman Reigns as he walks into each WrestleMania without a title. And yes, the second one wasn't for a championship, fine. But I mean, it was like you said, they tried to pass the torch to him like almost three different times. And then the third time they try and swerve us, which is even dumber. And it's just like, I understand what you're saying, that like that bad like version of Roman Reigns led to the Tribal Chief, which is now going to inevitably lead to the major babyface Roman. But I'm just saying, like, did it have to take as long as it did to get there?
No, it didn't. I mean, I would have turned him heel in Philadelphia in 2015 at the Rumble. I've said that many times. When The Rock came out, didn't save him. The Brock was even like, what the hell's going on here? I'm getting booed. Like, I'm getting booed. That's how much they hate Roman Reigns. I mean, I would have had him stand on the rope and had the referee tell him we're calling an audible and have Roman Reigns flip off the crowd as he's standing on the ropes instead of just pretending it's not happening. That's what I would have done and roll with it there. Or the night after he beat The Undertaker, when the crowd booed him for 15 minutes straight and the F you Roman chants, shut the F up, all these chants, like there were multiple perfect times to do it that who knows, maybe that would have been ultra successful. We don't know. I mean, it could have been as successful as what we have now, but we'll never know. We only have one path in life. We can't redo it. We can't see what would have been or could have been. But no, they had multiple perfect opportunities in two of those I just gave you. But the one thing I will say about Roman's return when it happens, what I don't want is Roman Reigns to come back and alter his character to anywhere near the big dog again. I don't want him coming back all smiles and pandering to the fans again and coming up with terrible, you know, catchphrases. I want him to just essentially be what he's been, the Tribal Chief. You don't need to change a thing. You honestly don't need to change a thing other than don't just, you know, don't insult every city you're in just by default. So that's the one thing I'm concerned that they're going to go back and go, okay, he's a babyface now. We got to change this and that. I would argue there's not a lot you need. Like, you wouldn't, 98% of what you have, I wouldn't change.
Yeah, well, no, and that's the key to it, right? Like, you just have to make him come back, have the same demeanor, have the same cadence, the same overall type of character, but not just be a complete D-bag. And I have confidence in this because of everything else going on in the product right now. And I think that's a testament to how good Triple H has been. And, you know, you and I had spoken about it in 2019, and I'm sure you've been talking about it way before, like how big of a negative impact Vince was having behind the scenes. And I remember you and I had a conversation once, like, man, do we make it Vince out to be the boogeyman too much? Like, is it overblown? Like, how much different would it be if he's not there? But do we finally have our answer now?
I mean, here's the thing. I wanted Triple H, even when he took over, officially took over, there's no more Vince in and out. He's kind of there. He's looming. He's backstage. But all that weird, the kind of time when Vince was gone, but not really. But now he's really gone. I think until that time, when Vince truly was gone and he had zero influence and wasn't showing up randomly at shows and that kind of thing, that's when I said, okay, now is when we can start judging Triple H as to what his product is going to be. And so, yeah, I think that now that it's been a significant period of time and Triple H was solely responsible, or at least signed off on all the creative for WrestleMania, now we can say, was it good? Was it bad? What is this different from what Vince would have done? So I think we can kind of decisively say, yeah, it's a new era. Vince is gone. There's no more McMahon influence anymore. It is Triple H's product to get cheered or booed for and have mistakes. He will have, I'm sure there'll be massive mistakes along the way for Triple H, and we'll deal with those as they come. But for me, I'm looking at this saying it feels different. So yeah, this is a much different feel to the product, and Triple H is being very smart about implementing change here, doing it incrementally, not overhauling the product week to week. So, yeah, this to me just feels different from what Vince would have done. And he shoved it down our throats for 5 to 6 years. And he probably could have been, I think he would have had a successful heel turn for Roman had he not waited. But here we are now. And I don't think it's the worst thing that we've seen, or the best thing we've seen from Triple H yet. I think there's better to come. So any final thoughts on the Roman part? Because I know we have another topic we want to get into.
No, I think it's a perfect transition because it all stems from the creative direction, right? As we like move into this new era and we're kind of ushering in a new era, which also comes with a new visual championship. So what are your thoughts on the new tag team titles, both on Raw and on SmackDown?
I like them. I think that... Here's the thing. I'm not big and passionate about how belts look. Like, they matter to me, but it's not something I think about and go, oh my God, this is going to suck because the belt looks terrible. The belt, I mean, I don't want a spinner belt. That was just, to me, just disrespectful to the championship itself. And the Raw and Tag Team Championships, I haven't actually liked from a visual perspective. This, to me, looks, feels more classic. It also, more importantly, is cohesive. Like, we have the women's world champion. We have now, officially, we've landed an undisputed WWE champion. There's no more undisputed heavyweight universal. Like, that's gone. It's just undisputed WWE champion, i.e. 2002. So, great. We've landed on what that is for the men and the women. Both of them have world champions and WWE champions. And now, for the tag teams, we have WWE champions and world champions. The cohesiveness to me is easier to understand than this brand has its own belt and that brand has its own belt. It's wonky because also when you bring over the tag team champions from one brand to the other, they have to have that weird swapping of the belts. And it's always kind of bizarre that they don't know how to figure it out every year. They're just like, well, what are we going to do? We're going to have a ceremony. It's so weird. So that no longer, there's no more brand specific belts. It's kind of a universal, if you will, belt that either anybody who gets drafted anywhere can bring to the other brand, and they don't have to give up their championships or swap championships. So that's gone, and I love it. So the tag team championships, I actually don't hate that they got split at WrestleMania. I've been a fan of less belts, but this to me makes more sense. You have two tag team championships, and now you have a tag team division that's on the rise that I know you want to comment on as well.
I think that the tag team division is in one of the best places it's been in years, honestly. I thought there was a brief period in 2016 and 2017 where both SmackDown and Raw had good depth to their tag team divisions, like where you had, you know, on Raw you had the OC, you had the New Day, you had Enzo and Cass, you had The Bar. On SmackDown you had the likes of American Alpha and the Usos and Heath Slater and Rhino, which were actually the inaugural SmackDown Tag Team Champions. But now you look at it on both brands, and look, on Raw you had the triple threat match to determine the undisputed the number one contenders, with the Creed brothers and DIY, the New Day, to face off against Awesome Truth. And that's not counting any two members of the Judgment Day or the Viking Raiders when Eric inevitably returns or what have you, or Imperium or Alpha Academy. And then you look on SmackDown and you have the Authors of Pain. You have the Street Profits, who are the number one contenders now. You have the New Catch Republic. I'm missing the other team who was involved. But you have very good depth on that side, too. Oh, Legado del Fantasma. You also have a team that you could bring out from the LWO, if you so choose. Like, or Pretty Deadly. And all of a sudden, you're, like, looking around, and you're just like, man, you have, like, up to five interesting tag teams, at least, on both Raw and SmackDown. And, yeah, it makes sense to have two tag team divisions and two tag team titles, as long as they don't cross paths. And I think that's the key to making this work, is making them feel completely exclusive and work independently from one another. So for me, I think the tag team division has been in a rough spot for probably just before the pandemic, and that's why they eventually went to the unified path with the Usos, then to Sami and Kevin, and onto the Judgment Day. But now, for me, I think that it's in such a good spot that you could have two separate tag team titles on each show.
It certainly has snuck up on us. The tag team division that we, like you said, you look around and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, there is a pretty good depth, if not for the first time in 5-10 years, there hasn't been this many. And it's not even just the number, it's the quality of the teams. Now, a lot of the teams need a lot of help. Like the New Catch Republic, we don't know anything about them other than Butch, or rather Pete Dunne, or
Pete Dunne.
Who is the
Pretty Deadly.
Pete Dunne. Well, Pretty Deadly calls him Pete Dunne, so I find that very funny. But I think that you look around, and there are teams that need help from a character development standpoint, but you're looking around, and you're like, hey, these are all high-quality wrestlers. Like, there's nobody that's sloppy. There's nobody that you'd look at and go, it's going to be a bad match. You know, that's what's great. And they have really high quality pro wrestlers. And that's something we haven't seen in a decade or more. And I love what they've done with this kind of under the radar, because everyone's been focusing on Rock, Roman, Seth, Cody, blah, you know, and rightfully so. But yeah, you look up and you're like, damn, all right, let's go. And now you have two tag team divisions that are going to be, I think, in a big way, maybe occasionally main eventing a SmackDown, main eventing a Raw. You have Awesome Truth that I don't think are probably going to hold it for very long, but you have A-Town Down Under that are up and coming, and arguably this is the best spot Austin Theory and Grayson Waller have been in collectively in their entire careers, which the win for John C- the loss to Austin Theory by John Cena did absolutely nothing for Austin Theory at all. We've discussed that at length, and now he's at a place that I think he's rebounded in a big way, becoming a tag team champion with Grayson Waller, and there's a lot they can do with that tag team division. Now, it's going to be consistent, right? WWE historically has not been consistent at all, especially with the women, which they're their own issue, right? I would not advocate for another tag team championship for the women. I know it's all about equality and things, but like that would actually be detrimental to the women. They can't even manage one. Let's get there first. But for the men, I think that they're in a much better spot. Splitting the tag team championships, that means there's going to be more tag team wrestling. And I don't know if Triple H did this on purpose or not, but with all the factions he created, like seemingly off the bat, if you remember when Triple H took over, one of the first things he did was just all of a sudden, bam, doing like one heel faction after another. And, you know, got to the point of like, okay, Trips, like calm down. Like we love factions too, but it felt like there was just, he was hammering them out. And I think that maybe in part he was doing that to say, hey, yes, these are factions. They can become single stars, but now we can also create tag teams out of this three or four man or four woman faction. You can do that. And we're seeing reaping the benefits of that now. As you mentioned, obviously the New Day's been there, but you have the Judgment Day, you have the Final Testament, right? And others, and you're looking at this going, okay, you can kind of swap them out and do many tag team matches. So they have a hell of a deep tag team division that does absolutely warrant two tag team championships.
And for you, are you happy with, well, like we know why Awesome Truth are a tag team right now. It was kind of like a nostalgia feel, a make good moment for Truth, give him his WrestleMania moment. But in terms of A-Town Down Under, obviously, this is helping Grayson Waller, but given where Austin Theory was, you know, 20 months ago or so, you know, like Money in the Bank holder, the U.S. champion for seemingly forever, do you think this is a step down for him? Or do you think being, you know, one of the premier tag teams on SmackDown is something that will actually help him?
Well, I mean, if you compare it and skip over the John Cena stuff to back where he was, you could say, well, he was holding a more important championship, but he didn't feel like he was, he didn't feel like a big star yet. I remember saying verbatim that I see what Vince McMahon sees in him. He does have the look. He does have a decent promo. It just felt like he wasn't a complete package yet. And then the John Cena thing happened and he just fell off a cliff for a long period of time. Even Solo Sikoa. I mean, he beat John Cena and then he started losing like match after match after match in the coming months. So the whole John Cena effect was a wasted experiment for both men. But do I think that Austin Theory is in a better place now than he was 20 months ago? In a way, yes, even though he's not holding a quote unquote more important championship because he's had 20 months more of experience. He's gone through the downs and hopefully he's been able to, I don't mean to be corny, but he's been able to figure out how to fix himself, figure out how to better himself and what went wrong and how to be better. And so I think that with that 20 months more of experience and the fact that he's got a tag team partner he can bounce himself off of, I think that he is in a better spot. Now that we'll see how long their reign lasts and what they do with it. But I think that, yes, his career is in a much better spot than it was, especially post John Cena. And, we'll have to see what they do. But as far as Awesome Truth goes, yeah, we know what that was. It's just a matter of, do they even get to SummerSlam as champions? Like, I mean, do you think that Awesome Truth even makes it to SummerSlam as tag team champions? Or do you think they'll maybe even drop it as soon as Backlash in a couple weeks?
No, I can't see them holding it for that long. And not every tag team title reign has to be like an exorbitant amount of time. For me personally, I would say, June max, maybe give them 2 months or so. But I just see a lot of teams on on Monday Night Raw right now. And obviously this is subject to change with the draft starting this Friday night on SmackDown. But like, I look at a team like the Creed Brothers who need an identity like overhaul. And I've seen a few rumors about them maybe joining Chad Gable as a heel faction, and maybe they laid an Easter egg to that as they were shown, like, I guess, sparring with Chad Gable in the ring in Montreal last week ahead of Monday Night Raw. And I think, like, that's a team, a heel tag team as the tag team champions really redefine their characters. And look, belts don't make the wrestlers. Wrestlers make the belts. But I feel like that would maybe be a perfect storm as to what the division needs, what the titles need, but also what the wrestlers need. And, there are other teams on Raw that you could look to. Like, I'm kind of waiting for maybe Imperium to get that. I think we're going to see some teams on SmackDown flip over to Monday Night Raw. Like, I could see the Authors of Pain being there. But for me, you look on both sides with the draft coming up, and I just can't justify having Truth and Miz hold it for that much longer.
No, they're probably, like you said, it's a feel good moment, and I have no issues with Triple H implementing shorter title reigns. I mean, Triple H has been very clear in how he feels about title reigns, that they should be long generally, that they should have staying power, and when the title changes hands, it should be newsworthy. It should make you feel something instead of just, okay, this person's champion this week, but they'll probably get it back in a month, which is how we felt under Vince McMahon for so many years. So occasionally a short title reign is okay. And I'm fine with Truth and Miz losing it. Maybe not Backlash, but, again, June, I think, is a solid time to lose it. What is that, Money in the Bank? I forget what the June one is.
Yeah.
But I think it is, right? Is it June or July? July might be Money in the Bank. I don't know what June is. I'll have to look.
I think it used to be Extreme Rules, but I think have they gone away with Extreme Rules now? Oh, no, Extreme Rules was in May last year.
That's a pay-per-view that bounces around all over.
Typically, I remember it being Vengeance back in the day. They would do Vengeance and they would do Great American Bash. But now it feels like June is just always turning over.
Yeah, I'm trying to Google it as we're talking here because I don't know what the PLE is in June. Let's see what it is. If someone else can pick it up, I'm sure. Let's see here. We've got, what is it? Money in the Bank. So May obviously is the Backlash event, and then there isn't one in June. That's why. So they're skipping over June. So it's going right from Backlash on May 4th to Money in the Bank on July 6th. So June is completely void of a PLE.
So there's no Night of Champions.
Nothing there.
Wow,
nothing there. Now I thought they had something in Saudi Arabia, but I don't see it here. So unless they have a PLE in Saudi Arabia that we all love so much, I don't know if, I mean, assuming they don't, let's pretend they don't, then I would say at the absolute latest Money in the Bank in early July is where Awesome Truth's reign ends. And that's fine with me. Again, we don't know what the tag team division is going to be. We can even have Judgment Day break up in this draft. And one part goes to SmackDown, part of it goes to Raw. I mean, there's a lot that could happen. I mean, I think after we come out of this draft, I think we all know who the biggest move should be, and that's LA Knight to Monday Night Raw. I mean, the tag team division could look a lot different. I don't have any issues with Awesome Truth holding it for too long, but it does kind of wear out its welcome after a couple of months where it's like, okay, cool. A 52-year-old Truth got his moment. It's fun. It feels good. He's deserving of it, absolutely, but... You know, I think that it's not, they're not the future of the company by any means.
It's funny. I'm looking at historical pay-per-views and like think about some of these. Armageddon, which was, I believe mm-hmm. that was usually in December. Capital yeah. Punishment. I don't even remember this one. Judgment Day, which was usually the SmackDown one in May. New Year's Revolution, January. Vengeance, which I believe that one flipped around. It went from like June, and then it also replaced Armageddon 1 year. I think it was the 9/11 year in December. Bragging Rights, which is essentially what Survivor Series became. Breaking Point, I remember they had that in Montreal. I believe that was September. Cyber Sunday, which replaced Taboo Tuesday in October. Fatal Four Way, don't even remember this. Didn't even remember this was a pay per view. No Way Out, which was that was the go home pay per view that was replaced by Elimination Chamber in February. The Bash, which I imagine was a spinoff of the Great American Bash. Unforgiven, mm-hmm. which was September, usually a Raw event. Over the Limit, I mean. I'm thinking of Fastlane. A lot of these are very similar. One Night Stand obviously derives from ECW. So it's crazy how many pay-per-views that they've had over the years.
And I'm a big fan of just having the same, like, I don't know. I know that their big four, they have not varied from in the months, like Rumble's in January, Survivor Series is in November, obviously WrestleMania, like all those are fine, but they've mixed it up so much. I don't know why they do that just to keep things going, but it also is, it screws me up because I think of, like you said, Armageddon's definitely in December. To me, Fastlane is always in February. Like, I mean, like I've just like got these imprints in my mind of when pay-per-views should be. So it screws me up. And then you throw Saudi Arabia in there that no one wants. And that also throws a wrench into things. And yeah, I mean, so it's not, I'm not going to die on this hill, but it's just, it throws me off. I mean, Money in the Bank has also been kind of pushed around all over the place. Originally, Money in the Bank was actually its own WrestleMania match. It wasn't its own event. So fine. I mean, so we go from Backlash to Money in the Bank. Then we have the Bash in Berlin, which is at the end of August. So that's going to be interesting. We go from Bash in Berlin. SummerSlam is also in early August. So let's see here. Maybe I was looking at, I know why I didn't see the other pay-per-view. Here's where it is. I got it. Whoops. Sorry, guys. I was looking at the DirecTV schedule and not the actual one. So what I said, Backlash is correct. We have a May event. There we go. It's King and Queen of the Ring in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, May 25th. So there is a May event that's at the end that is in Saudi Arabia. And then it's Clash at the Castle in June in Glasgow, Scotland. I was like, wait a minute. Okay, that's what it is. And then we have Toronto, Money in the Bank, and then SummerSlam. Okay,
so DirecTV is Bash in Berlin.
That is in that's August 31st. So we have two PLEs in August, one at the very beginning, one at the very end. But yeah, there's a Toronto event in there, and the two I was missing was King and Queen of the Ring in May, and then Clash at the Castle in Scotland in June, which you'd imagine Drew McIntyre is going to have a massive role in June, with maybe CM Punk or whatever, but. Yeah, so we do have a full schedule every single month, and two in 1 month.
I think. Do you think Drew McIntyre is the next World Heavyweight Champion?
I hope so, but the problem is, I mean, do they want him to have the belt when Punk comes after him? Because Punk is only a couple months away. Do they want him to be champion when Punk returns? Because it's Punk. Is Punk going to be a world champion? I don't know what I don't know if I want Punk as world champion. I know a lot of fans do. I want a proper heel run with Drew for a long period of time, like 6 to 12 months. That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah, because you could string it. When's Punk supposed to come back? SummerSlam?
Early is apparently, from what I'm hearing, is earliest is June, but maybe more likely towards July before before SummerSlam in August.
So, I mean, you could, if he wins it at Clash at the Castle and he's champion as of June, you could maybe have him hold that title until Survivor Series. And that's a 5-month run. And then you could have Punk beat him at Survivor Series for the world championship. And then that could set up Punk versus Seth Rollins for the world title next year at WrestleMania.
There you go. The one that we were supposed to get this year. Yes. It almost seems like WrestleMania 41 is a do-over for a lot of matches that were supposed to happen at 40.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Rock Roman, you know, Seth and Punk, or Drew and Cody. I mean, there's a lot that, that is kind of a redo from last year.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that's definitely plausible. And I just want, Drew to be champion. I mean, they keep fumbling around with it. I understand that you have Damian Priest and he has come a long way, but it feels Damian is exactly what Drew said he is on Raw. He is a transitional champion. He kind of is, I think, because I don't dislike Damian Priest. I think there's a lot he has to offer. I think he'll be champion for a couple of months, but this belongs to Drew. I mean, it just does.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Like, I do like Damian Priest. I feel like they kind of jumped to, like, you know, take away the shock value at WrestleMania. I still think there may have been some validity to doing this a bit down the line. But then again, maybe that they're setting up for him to win a Clash of the Castle, right? So if that's the case, then sure. Like, I could fully see the main event at Clash of the Castle being a triple threat match between Damian Priest, Jey Uso, and Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, there you go. Well, the reason I think they did it is they look at the calendar and go, okay, here's the plans we've got. And Damian only has a couple of months left to cash in. We got to do it now. Yeah. Like, you know, they got to do it. And so they did it. And now they have to find a way to get it off of him in a way that doesn't really hurt him. And because I do like Damian Priest. I'm a fan of his character. I don't want him to be damaged by the passing of the torch to someone else. But it's just, it doesn't feel like it's quite time yet. We're getting closer for a long Damian Priest run. But I don't feel like we're there quite yet. So, yeah, this is just a case of, like, crap, we got to get this off him. We got to get the briefcase off him because Money in the Bank's coming up, you know. So I think that's where they landed, and that's why. But all right, any final thoughts?
The only thing that I want to mention is apparently today, this is via On This Day in WWE on X, 5 years ago today on WWE Raw was the first time we saw Bray Wyatt in the Firefly Funhouse.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
That's, oh my God. I remember watching that going, why do I like this right now? It's bizarre.
Yep.
I remember going, what the hell is he doing in a sweater? You know, like, I remember the red sweater, and just going, what did I just watch? And people wouldn't stop talking about it. And,
what do you think that they're doing with the barcodes again and all this stuff?
I mean, I'm not going to try to reinvent the wheel here. It's got to be Bo Dallas as Uncle Howdy, or some version of the Fiend, or some tie back to Bray that Bo Dallas is going to present to us. I think, what else could it possibly be? Because now the fans want that. So if it's anything else, they're going to be like, huh? You know, you've kind of said, I mean, you know, that's what I think. They almost have to do that. Something with Bo Dallas and a weird character that relates back to Bray Wyatt that people will love automatically because it's tied back to Bray.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is that it feels like the build to this kind of stuff is always better than the actual payoff. That's the one thing I've kind of made me a bit reserved about it.
It is, and it's partly creative's fault, partly the fans have sometimes too high of expectations, so it's a combination of things. But, I mean, I have my expectations pretty moderate. I think I'm not going to go through the roof. It's going to be the best debut ever. Oh, my God, this character is so much fun. It feels like Bray again. But I also know that things have been terrible, and we've seen awful debuts and awful, characters being introduced. Like, remember Mordecai? Oh, people Jesus forget about Christ. Him. So, like, you've had terrible dark characters introduced that are knockoffs clearly of others. So I think there's time to figure this out and time to debate it. But I have moderate, kind of neutral expectations about it. Not excited, crazy, but I'm also not down on it. I'm kind of like, all right, let's wait and see.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what it is, but like you, I'm kind of reserving my expectations. But all in all, been a fun 2 weeks, actually, since we had last spoken.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys, if you want a more in-depth listen on the Raw review, or rather Raw in-person perspective from Anthony, you can go over to the After Dark side of things on Patreon and check that out, as you gave a much more detailed description of the things that you saw and experienced while you were there at the Bell Center. So I'd encourage everyone to check that out. And yeah, it's been too long, but we'll be back next week in the saddle and chatting more about Backlash, which will be only a few days away at that point.
Looking forward to it, man. Talk soon.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.